It's time now for today's cover story, which is about Russian culture. More to the point, Russian culture back in the day, during the Soviet period. There are young adults today, Americans old enough to vote in this fall's elections, who do not remember the Soviet Union because they were kindergartners when it ceased to exist. But Soviet culture was always hidden from us anyway. We knew Russia mostly through Cold War movies, like Dr. Strangelove, which satirized our ignorance.
Mr. President, if I may speak freely, the Rusky talks big, but frankly, we think he's short of know-how. I mean, you just can't expect a bunch of ignorant peons to understand a machine like some of our boys. And that's not meant as an insult, Mr. Ambassador. I mean, you take your average Rusky, we all know how much guts he's got. Hell, look at all of them Nazis killed off, and they still wouldn't quit.
I remember the first and only chance I had to dip my toe into the Soviet sphere, a trip to East Germany and Hungary in 1987. I remember watching TV in my Budapest hotel, switching from some orchestral performance on one channel to a manic and surreal contemporary cartoon on another channel. An extraordinary little animated film I saw when the credits rolled that had been produced in Moscow by an agency of the Soviet Union. It was bracing to be reminded that the Soviet state, then our archenemy for the previous 40 years, genuinely monstrous in so many ways, also permitted such interesting culture to flourish. Today, more than a decade after the Soviet Union imploded, it seems like a good time to look back. Some Russian artists are actually wistful for the art and entertainment that was created during that long, difficult time, and we'll hear why. My guest is Svetlana Boym, the author of a fascinating book called The Future of Nostalgia. She emigrated from the Soviet Union in 1981 when she was about 20 and now teaches literature at Harvard. Svetlana Boym, welcome to Studio 360.
Thank you.
I was fascinated to read in your book that nostalgia 300-odd years ago was a medical condition, and it was a phrase coined by a doctor to describe a sickness.
Well, exactly. It was a real surprise for me. This is how I began my research. I thought of nostalgia as something eternal, as a part of human condition. You know, we think about Odyssey as the first epic of nostalgia. But then I discovered that the word, it was coined by a Swiss medical student defending his dissertation in 1688, and it was a medical disease, and they believed that leeches, opium, and return to your homeland will cure the symptoms.
So even though, as you say, Odysseus was beset by nostalgia as he traveled around the world trying to get home. But nostalgia, as we know it today, is really a modern condition, a modern kind of longing.
Nostalgia essentially has to do with modern conception of time, because it seems to be a longing for a place, but it's also a longing for another time. And if you can travel back home or back to a place you once called home, but you cannot really travel in time. You know, we're all nostalgic for our childhood. I can sing, I'm not going to do it on the radio, all the Soviet songs of my youth, but I use it ironically. I do it as a kind of exorcism, as fun, as play, you know, as a memory of a different time. But it's very important to distinguish between time of one's childhood and a particular historical era.
And today, in the post-Soviet period in Russia, how much is discovering the national past important to former Soviet citizens?
You know, I would distinguish several periods. I mean, last 10 years was a kind of the time of accelerated history in Russia. You know, there was a period of euphoria, of perestroika, you know, sometime between 1988 and 1991, culminating with, you know, people for the first time going to the barricades. Then there is a time, what I call from perestroika to reconstruction, mid-1990s, when nostalgia begins to settle in. And it was not exactly nostalgia for communism. Rather, it was some kind of nostalgia for great Russia, the great motherland, with kind of conception of that we had great past. The Tsar Nicholas, Lenin, Stalin, they were all part of our great past. So the first period of perestroika was characterized by coming to terms with history. And the second period was, in a way, about depoliticizing, longing for stability, for, you know, social glue, for certain kind of recognizable predictability of life. And now we live in a different time, you know, in the Putin time, when perhaps this form of nostalgia became self-fulfilling prophecy. So when, you know, when I hear stories about Russia, I've been there a year ago, it resembles very much the late era of stagnation, as they call it, moderate authoritarianism. So I think now is the time to be nostalgic for early 90s and not to be nostalgic for the late Soviet era.
Why in 1981, what made you decide to leave the Soviet Union?
That's a difficult question. I was 20 years old. It was a combination of perhaps political and existential need. I decided to leave in 1979 when Russia invaded Afghanistan, and I was at the second year in the university. And to some extent, it was a clear political decision. At a certain point, there was no other choice for me but to immigrate. Also, I was part of the Jewish immigration. And there were obvious cases of anti-Semitism, being accepted to the university. For instance, I ended up going to State Pedagogical Institute to study Spanish because I was told this was the only place where they were accepting people who were Jews in their passport. Of course, I was told that unofficially. However, there were also perhaps existential reasons for immigration. I saw very many Western films, particularly French and Italian films, and I really dreamt of another world, perhaps a less predictable world.
Which films inspired you most?
We saw very few American films. The film that really inspired me, I don't know how well known it is in the United States, it's a film of Michelangelo Antonioni called The Passenger with Jack Nicholson and Maria Schneider. It's a very unlikely film, but it's all about choosing the other identity. I was particularly inspired by Maria Schneider and the fact that she travels across the border, you know, changes lovers, changes books, studies architecture. She does what she wishes to do. She acts on her whim. She's independent. And just this wind in her hair and her way of being in the world.
You write in the book about your fellow Russian emigre, Vladimir Nabokov, and his exile's relationship to his past after he emigrated here many years ago. I'd love it if you could read something from his memoir, Speak Memory.
Okay, gladly. What impressed me always about Nabokov is that he is subtle, emotional, insightful, longing, but never sentimental. He has the same critical distance and fear of sentimentalization of one's longing. So this is, I would read a passage where he talks about leaving Russia, not about returning back. And it starts with a line which for me represents a kind of praise of exile. I read from Speak Memory. The break in my own destiny affords me, in retrospect, a syncopal kick that I would not have missed for worlds. This is my favorite line, syncopal kick, which is at once syncope, is a missed beat in music. It's also a medical condition, you know. When you're short of breath, it's the foundation of that nostalgia, or Russian tuska, when you really cannot breathe. But then he says that this missed beat is a kind of foundation of his literary art, and he would not miss it for worlds. Incidentally, this line was omitted from the Russian version of his autobiography. It's as if he did not want to put this praise of exile into the Russian text. But I would continue reading. Ever since the exchange of letters with Tamara, his first love, homesickness has been with me a sensuous and particular matter. Nowadays, the mental image of matted grass on the Yala, of a canyon in the Urals, affects me nostalgically and patriotically as little or as much as, say, Utah. But give me anything on any continent resembling the St. Petersburg countryside, and my heart melts. What it would be actually to see again my former surroundings, I can hardly imagine. Sometimes I fancy myself revisiting them with a false passport under an assumed name. It could be done. but I do not think that I shall ever do it. I have been dreaming of it too idly and too long. For me, this non-return home, Nabokov never actually returned back to Russia, became a foundation for his art. It's the false passport, in a way, it's an artist passport to create homelands in the text. Nabokov also had very interesting, you know, political position. Nobody thinks of Nabokov as a political writer, but in a way, he said that he was always kind of a classical liberal. He believed that the portraits of the leaders should never be bigger than a stamp, than a postage stamp. So for me, in a way, his reflection on longing is both very important for understanding art. He ended up saying that he believes that his expatriation or his exile began at birth, and it became a foundation for his art. Of course, he looks back and through all his life as if the exile, you know.
Did your reading of Nabokov and of that of Speak Memory, while you were in the Soviet Union, inform your idea about what a future exile would be like?
Oh, not at all. Nabokov was a prohibited writer. Lolita was smuggled in late 70s. I read it over, you know, one night and was amazed. Nabokov was absolutely prohibited writer. It was number one bestseller among the smugglers to Russia. But I read Nabokov when I came to America. I have not read him in Russia at all. So, but it's interesting that Nabokov became the most popular writer of early perestroika. And in fact, now in Petersburg, there is a new Nabokov Museum. It's a tiny museum in his former house. It's very curious, though, that in that museum, they talk about Nabokov's Russian past almost as if he has never left. They do not talk about his being an American writer, him living half of his life outside Russia. It's as if they made him return home against his will.
Svetlana Boym is my guest today, and we're talking about Russian culture back in the Soviet years.